l'aise, c'est le plus important. Chers amis, bonjour. J'ai l'honneur de modérer cet atelier dont l'importance n'échappe à personne dans cette salle. Et nous sommes déjà un peu en retard, donc je ne vais pas faire beaucoup de cérémonial dans ce premier propos introductif. Je voudrais simplement dire que j'ai l'honneur d'avoir à mes côtés les co-organisateurs de cet atelier extrêmement important qui vont donc prendre la parole dans cette première partie de notre atelier pour vous accueillir dans cet espace qui a été créé pour évoquer les questions des standards internationaux pour aboutir à un Internet multilingue. Je voudrais donc rappeler simplement que cet atelier se situe dans la perspective globale qui a été évoquée pendant le sommet sur la société de l'information, vous le savez tous. Nous ne pouvons pas parler de société de l'information, de la connaissance et des savoirs partagés pour tous si l'instrument privilégié qui structure cette société, c'est-à-dire l'Internet, n'est pas accessible à tous. Donc la problématique globale, c'est celle d'avoir à terme un Internet où chaque citoyenne du monde, pourrait être à l'aise et utiliser l'instrument qui, comme on l'a dit hier pendant la cérémonie, la session d'ouverture et la cérémonie d'ouverture, devrait être un bien public mondial accessible à toutes les sociétés du monde. Je voudrais donc inviter notre premier orateur, Son Excellence Monsieur Amadou Ntouré, Docteur Amadou Ntouré, qui est secrétaire général de l'UIT, à prendre la parole.
Merci, Adama. Dear colleagues and friends, it is an honor to have been invited to address this thematic workshop co-organized jointly with UNESCO and ICANN. This meeting is of considerable importance for ITU as it represents a truly collaborative initiative and highlights the relations between ITU and the other relevant players, organizations like UNESCO and ICANN. I'm very glad to have the opportunity to address this workshop with Mr. Toumé, Paul Toumé, and of ICANN, and Mrs. Miriam Nipset from UNESCO, and I hope they will share my desire to give a new direction and boost to these relationships working toward cooperation and collaboration. As I already mentioned yesterday during my address, there is a very clear understanding of the relationship that we need to have in order to move the Internet governance together. The World Summit on Information Society has expressed the view that all governments should have an equal role and responsibility for international Internet governance and for ensuring the stability, security, and continuity of the Internet. In particular, at the World Summit on Information Society, world leaders and governments committed to work earnestly toward the multilingualization of the Internet as part of a multilateral, transparent, and democratic process involving governments and all stakeholders in their respective roles. We are here today to discuss how best to enact the commitment and turn the vision of an inclusive Internet in which all can participate into with reality. There are more than 6,000 different languages in the world, facilitating information exchange and access to knowledge, making the Internet available in non-Latin-based script and allowing users to read in their own language, which is vital steps for the ICT community as a whole and needs to take within a collaborative multi-stakeholder approach. ITU is taking actions to ensure internet use and advancement across language barriers are requested by the member states, as requested by member states, with a special attention to developing countries. The ITU standardization sector, ITUT, is analyzing a survey on member states' experience in IDN in order to identify issues, needs, deployment scenarios, and options for IDN to assist member states and linguistic groups of member states in their deployment actions. This work is available to everyone and can be integrated with other activities and initiatives within the spirit of enhanced cooperation. We are not new to this. In May 2006, ITU co-organized with UNESCO a workshop on multilingualism. The ITU telecommunication development sector, ITUD, is closely working with governments and industry from developing countries to implement programs that seek to address the linguistic digital divide and ensure that everyone can participate in the emerging new information society. Much has been achieved, but much more needs to be done. Cooperation is a key element. We need to build a network of consensus and mutual collaboration that can permit free exchange of ideas, expertise, and competencies. We need to show the world that the ICT community can work together with a common need in mind, that internationalized internet domain names and more generally information and communication technologies, ICTs, and the internet must be widely accessible to all citizens without regard to gender, race, religion, country of residence, or language. ITU is a unique forum for a long history, with a long history of consensus building, and we want to work with all relevant organizations. We need to do more together, and if we succeed, we all share the credit of our collaborative efforts. As former President Harry Truman said, it is amazing what you can accomplish if you do not care who gets the credit. I look forward to discussing how we can strengthen the relationship between our organizations and work toward building a multilingual and multicultural information society for all. Thank you.
Symbolique très forte qui a été pendant tout le sommet se retrouve aujourd'hui ici autour de cette problématique.
Vous m'entendiez pas, hein? Oh là 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 là. Je disais donc que je voudrais maintenant passer la parole à la deuxième personnalité de cette cérémonie d'ouverture de cet atelier, Madame Lisbeth. Myriam Nisbet, qui est directrice de la division de la Société de l'information à l'UNESCO, l'UNESCO qui est la seconde institution de ce processus du sommet, qui, du point de vue symbolique, était la deuxième jambe du sommet mondial sur la Société de l'information. L'UIT étant la première jambe, s'occupant, ou le premier pilier, disons, s'occupant des infrastructures et l'UNESCO des contenus. Et il est heureux symboliquement que nous ayons ces deux organisations organiser ensemble cet atelier avec ICANN, je reviendrai là-dessus. Et donc je voudrais passer la parole à Myriam Nisbet pour son intervention. Myriam, you have the floor.
Merci. Can you hear me? Are we on? Thank you. No, I don't think so. All right. All right. In the back, if someone could raise your hand and just let me know. Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. And thank you for those kind remarks, Adama. The broader policy debate on internet governance is linked to the principles integral to UNESCO's concept of knowledge societies. Freedom of expression, universal access to information, cultural and linguistic diversity, and equal access to education. These principles were echoed in UNESCO's recommendation concerning the promotion and use of multilingualism and universal access to cyberspace, which was adopted by UNESCO in 2003. Now more than ever, knowledge and information are key determinants of wealth creation, social transformation, and human development. Language is the primary vector for communicating knowledge and traditions. The opportunity to use one's language on global information networks such as the internet will determine the extent to which one can participate in the emerging knowledge society. Thousands of languages worldwide are absent from internet content, and there are no tools for creating or translating information into these excluded languages. Huge sections of the world's population are thus prevented from enjoying the benefits of technological advances and obtaining information essential to their well-being and development. Unchecked, this situation will contribute to a loss of cultural diversity on information networks and a widening of socioeconomic inequalities. Such barriers seem to deepen the knowledge divide more than the lack of infrastructure or maybe any other factors. I hearken back to the year 1845. With the rapid expansion of the telegraph, the first internet, newspapers, and the railroad, the United States in 1845 was moving into a new communication and information age, as exciting to those people then as we are excited now. But one skeptic was Henry David Thoreau, famous then and famous now still for his efforts to live in a simple style. As for the new inventions that were touted as miracles, such as the telegraph, Thoreau observed, "Men have an indistinct notion that if they keep up this activity of joint stocks and spades long enough, all will at length ride somewhere in next to no time and for nothing. But though a crowd rushes to the depot and the conductor shouts all aboard, when the smoke is blown away and the vapor condensed, it will be perceived that a few are riding, but the rest are run over." 160 years later, in yet another information age, UNESCO is calling upon all stakeholders to address the multifaceted issue of multilingualism, including internationalized domain names, font and character sets, text encoding systems, implementation of languages in various major operating systems and electronic devices, including cellular phones, digital content development tools, search engines, and automatic translation tools. UNESCO is fully committed to its World Summit mandate to ensure cultural and linguistic diversities. We want to ensure that we work together, and of course that means working with ITU and ICANN, our partners here today, towards a set of universal standards aimed at facilitating the creation of multilingual knowledge repositories and enhancing access to such knowledge. At the dawn of this information age, when knowledge societies are in the making, It is vital to understand that their full potential will never be reached if the free flow of ideas by word and image is restrained. Freedom of multilingual expression is not simply a happy byproduct of such societies, but is the very fuel that drives their dynamic transformation. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Myriam. Je crois que les deux dimensions ont été évoquées par nos deux précédents orateurs. La question d'un Internet multilingue, avoir... Non, ça ne marche pas. What is happening? On a toujours dit ça. Hein. On a dit que les technologies est une très bonne chose, sauf quand ça ne marche pas.
Ça marche avec les techniciens.
Ça marche avec les techniciens. Voilà. Merci beaucoup à Myriam d'avoir donné les valeurs fondamentales qui sous-tendent l'action de l'UNESCO dans ce processus de l'Internet multilingue. Maintenant, je voudrais me tourner vers notre troisième intervenant, notre troisième personnalité. Le docteur Paul Twemi, qui est président de ICANN, ICANN étant l'instrument de gestion d'Internet, à propos duquel beaucoup d'interrogations ont fusé pendant tout le processus du sommet et continuent encore au niveau de cet espace de la gouvernance de l'Internet. Et je dois dire, avant qu'il ne prenne la parole, que je me réjouis que le secrétaire général de l'UIT a dit dans son intervention la volonté de l'UIT de coopérer avec ICANN, avec l'UNESCO, et de développer un esprit de coopération afin de continuer à faire de cet instrument l'instrument accessible à tous. Mais en quels termes et comment? C'est là toute la question. Et cet atelier va certainement nous permettre d'avancer dans la recherche de cet équilibre entre la gestion d'un instrument qui jusqu'ici est faite par ICANN et que beaucoup d'acteurs estiment devant être partie prenante de cette gestion, de manière à assurer un Internet démocratique, transparent, comme l'a dit le secrétaire général de l'UIT, et accessible à tous pour que ce soit véritablement conforme à ce dont les membres du système des Nations Unies ont convenu à Genève et à Tunis. Paul, you have the floor.
Merci, Adama. I'd like to say, first of all, how pleased I am to be sitting here both with you, particularly with Hamadoun and with Myriam. And I'd like to really express our pleasure for the cooperation between ITU, UNESCO, and ICANN in organizing this workshop. And I think especially on addressing such an important topic of internet multilingualism. I'd like to reinforce, I think, Hamadoun's wise words concerning the accelerating opportunity for cooperation among our three organizations to help address the future needs of the world's users of the internet. And I think we're very pleased to be here, and we appreciate this opportunity very much. There are 1.2 billion users today of the internet who have access, and one key barrier to those who are yet to get there is the language. The availability of multilingual content and localized applications is crucial to help increase the internet population. That's not to mention the challenge of developing and implementing standards at the various layers to maintain interoperability across the wide range of today's operating systems, character encoding systems, applications and user interfaces, all to be multilingual enabled. A tiny part, a really tiny part, but an important part of an internet multilingualism is internationalized domain names. And ICANN has been doing considerable work in the area of IDNs. I should really say ICANN and its community, and particularly the Internet Engineering Task Force, have been doing significant work in the area of IDNs with our respective stakeholders. The issue of IDNs is in of itself complex, with multiple issues, both technical and policy-based. There are many scripts and associated languages around the world that need to be accommodated in the implementation of IDNs. A first stage of this work was the establishment of the guidelines for TLD registries in the implementation of second-level IDNs, in other words, IDNs before the dot. And these have been in place for four years or more. And I can see in the room members of the TLD registry community, particularly operators of .jp, .cn in the room, who've actually moved forward in a comprehensive way to implement those second-level IDNs. And I think there's much to be learned from their experience. But we have now also moved on to the technically more complex issue of the implementation of IDNs at the top level domain space, that is, after the dot. And there'll be people speaking at the panel on that issue. Since October the 15th, internet users around the globe have been enjoying live testing of domain names in scripts supporting 11 languages live in the internet's root server, in the key of the root. The domain name example, and the domain name is example.test, is now up in 11 test languages: Arabic, Persian, traditional and simplified Chinese, Russian, Hindi, Greek, Korean, Yiddish, Japanese, and Tamil. This is one of the biggest changes in the internet since its inception. And obviously there'll be panel members speaking more about this in the session following our introduction. The internet is a collaborative medium, and the challenge of making this medium much diverse in culture needs no less collaboration. And we look forward to discussing the challenges of developing standards for the various layers of applications, operating systems, and encoding systems. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, Paul. Merci à tous les trois d'avoir introduit cette session. Et comme Paul l'a dit, nous allons entrer, en les libérant tout à l'heure, nous allons entrer dans le détail de ces questions. Comment arriver à l'équilibre souhaité qui a été évoqué par nos trois illustres intervenants. Je crois que la symbolique est très forte. Je parlais de deux jambes, on a un trépied maintenant. Vous savez qu'avec les trépieds, on a l'équilibre. Et puis, c'est les trois pierres constitutives du foyer africain, où on fait la cuisine, d'où jaillit le feu, la lumière et la vie aussi, parce que c'est là qu'on fait la cuisine. Donc, les trois pieds, c'est extrêmement important. Voilà, merci. Merci beaucoup à vous de nous avoir introduits à cette session. Et je vais donc inviter... merci beaucoup. Je vais donc inviter nos panélistes à se joindre à moi ici. Christine Arida, Claudio Menezes, Dr. Govin, John Clensin, Malcolm Johnson, Vin Cerf et Michel Siguignard. Je pense qu'il y a assez de... Nous avons sept, normalement, panélistes qui vont me rejoindre ici. Je voudrais très rapidement, parce qu'on a très peu de temps malheureusement, vu le fait qu'on a commencé assez tardivement, on doit terminer à 14 heures, mais je voudrais, avant d'introduire nos panélistes, effectivement rebondir sur ce qui a été évoqué par nos trois orateurs, et en particulier cette question permanente de la possibilité à la fois d'être pragmatique en utilisant l'instrument qu'est Internet, parce que vous savez, pendant la société de l'information, pendant tout le processus de Genève et de Tunis, la grande question qui était posée tout le temps, c'était de dire, nous avons un instrument pragmatique, il faut le garder en tant que tel, il ne faut pas le casser. Si on essaye d'introduire des dimensions de démocratisation ou de diversité, ça peut poser des problèmes. Il y a eu toujours ce débat, et le débat est continu. Je crois qu'il est important de se rappeler que cette tension entre une vision, j'allais dire, holistique et une vision pragmatique est une tension de la vie en permanence. Et nous sommes dans cette tension-là, et je crois qu'il est important, au cours de cet atelier où nous avons des personnalités illustres qui maîtrisent tous les aspects techniques beaucoup plus que moi, j'espère qu'au cours de cet atelier, nous allons avoir des pistes qui nous permettront de réduire cette tension et de faire en sorte que la dimension pragmatique, utile, ne doit pas être, j'allais dire, réduite à une vision étroite de la nécessité d'agir sans prendre en compte le contexte global dans lequel on est. C'est pour cette raison que la dialectique entre une vision holistique qui renvoie à la complexité des situations et la diversité du monde dans lequel nous sommes, avec la vision, j'allais dire, pragmatique de l'utilisation d'un instrument qui peut permettre de réunir tout le monde dans la communication humaine, cela doit être en permanence dans les débats qui vont aujourd'hui s'instaurer. En effet, je dirais simplement, par exemple, à quoi sert un IDN, comme l'évoquait Paul tout à l'heure, si je n'ai pas de clavier? À quoi sert le clavier si la langue n'est pas codée? À quoi sert le code s'il n'y a pas de contenu? À quoi sert le code s'il n'y a pas d'utilisateur? Donc la grande question, c'est comment aujourd'hui arriver à faire de cet instrument un instrument qui fasse de notre société en construction une société inclusive, permettre à chaque communauté du monde d'être à l'aise dans cet instrument, comment faire en sorte que le pragmatisme ne soit pas peut-être la loi du plus fort, mais qu'il soit un pragmatisme intégral où chacun se reconnaisse dans l'instrument parce qu'il est partie prenante de ce qui va se dire. Voilà en gros la problématique que pose aujourd'hui cet atelier-là, de mon point de vue, et je voudrais vous introduire pour aborder cette problématique aux différents panélistes qui sont autour de moi très rapidement. Je ne vais pas les présenter parce que ça va être très long. Je voudrais simplement les nommer avec leurs fonctions, parce que pour leur CV, vous allez trouver ça sur le site web. Christine Arida, qui va être la première à intervenir, est Director for Telecom Planning and Services at the National Telecommunication Regulatory Authority of Egypt. Claudio Menezes is now the Administrative Coordinator of the Brazilian Institute for Information in Science and Technology within the Brazilian Ministry for Science and Technology. Il va, en parlant, vous allez comprendre qu'il a un background par rapport à l'UNESCO. Dr. Govin is the Director of the Ministry of Communication and Information Technology of India. John Clensin, you have met him during the plenary. He is now an independent consultant following a distinguished career at the Internet Architecture Vice President at AT&T. Malcolm Johnson was elected Director of the ITU Telecommunication Standardization Bureau by the Plenipotentiary Conference in Antalya in 2006, you remember, in Turkey. Alors, est-ce qu'il faut présenter Vinserf? Je crois que c'est difficile de présenter Vinserf. tout le monde le connaît, c'est vraiment notre Vinserf. Bon, vice-président et chef de Internet Evangelist pour Google. Et last but not least, nous avons Monsieur Michel Signard, qui est Senior Program Manager, Tech and Globalization à Microsoft.
Il est où?
Ah, il est. Ah oui, mais je pensais qu'on avait assez de sièges. Il faut peut-être au moins vous lever pour qu'on vous voit. Hein, je crois qu'on pourrait le loger quelque part. Voilà, Monsieur Michel Chignard. Bien, très bien. Je vais sans tarder passer la parole à notre première intervenante. J'ai craint que nous n'ayons que 5 minutes maximum, pour vos interventions, pour permettre au moins une interaction avec la salle, parce que nous avons maintenant moins d'une heure pratiquement. Merci beaucoup, Christine, de comprendre cela. Shukran, vous avez la parole.
Allô. Merci, Adama. Thank you for this opportunity to speak here. I will be very short because in sake of time. I think the issue that we're addressing here today is an extremely important one, especially as we talk about the region where I come from, the Arab world. It's an extremely important issue. We have less than 0.5% of internet content is in Arabic, okay? And this is a main barrier. It is sure that this is a main barrier to connectivity in our countries. But when looking at content in general, maybe we can think when looking at multilingualism that we have many issues. We have IDNs, we have content, we have applications, and there are many issues to that. And I think, now talking about Egypt, we have tried to work on those several aspects to encourage the availability of multilingualism or the availability of a multilingualism internet, let's put it this way. We've worked on IDNs in the framework of the Arabic domain name pilot project and in cooperation with the IDN activities in the framework of ICANN. But we've also many initiatives with respect to local content. The issue is that when you think about content, you also have to think about users online, because we believe users are a main producer of local content. So you come to the chicken and egg issue. You say, if I have more local content, I can attract more online users. And on the other hand, if I have more users, they are the producer of content. So I think there is an important role for governments to play in a public-private partnership framework. They have to trigger content in order to let it provoke access, okay? And I believe things like, for example, putting public information online in local languages, maybe digitizing efforts in order to have online content. In Egypt, for example, we have to share with you content awards in schools and universities for local content. So these are issues. But one thing I want to stress on, since we're talking about standards here, is that we have to make sure that the internet should not be fragmented in any way. I mean, we should not have small islands in the different local languages. We should have one big internet where everyone is connected and comfortably connected with his local language. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Christine, d'avoir introduit cette première problématique de notre atelier, c'est-à-dire, en réalité, la problématique de l'Internet multilingue du point de vue des pays en développement. Nous avons donc 3 intervenants sur cette problématique. Christine vient de nous parler de l'expérience égyptienne. Je vais donc passer la parole à Claudio Menezes, qui va donc poursuivre dans cette même veine. C'est à la fois les défis, les expériences réussies et, disons, le rôle des gouvernements et des institutions internationales. Claudio.
Bon dia. Bonjour. Buenos dias. Good morning. While I'm working presently for the Brazilian government, my DNA is more or less a UNESCO DNA, because I worked for 20 years in UNESCO. And as you know, UNESCO, particularly in the area of communication and information, has 2 major topics. One is freedom of expression, and the second is access to information. And language is the first vehicle for both. So it's a normal thing that UNESCO was interested in these areas. But before going to my three slides, I would like to mention that we have been, during that period of work, with an utopia, which is multilingualism in the digital world. Can this utopia become a reality? That's the challenge that is before all the stakeholders. And I would like to bring to this audience some highlights, which the next slide. We have over 15% of the world's 6,000 languages in danger. We have around 90%, the next one, of the world language are not substantially represented on internet. We have approximately 20% of the world's language without any written form. And Africa presents the higher linguistic diversity index. There are studies on that. We cannot go about this today. In front of this challenge, the work that I have been participating when I was with UNESCO was major on three topics. One, awareness, a second, policies, and a third, pilot projects. And if you could put the next slide, we could see what we see as the major key issues, because UNESCO cannot do everything. The next one. These major issues, I used to call them informally, from oral language to digital objects. And only just quickly, we can focus on aspects of written form of an oral language. We have to devote sometimes on scripts and semantic rules for a particular language. Of course, all this work is to map the symbols of a script into a digital table, which invite us to the next chapter, which is related to this discussion here, standardization of fonts of characters, which is a prerequisite to develop software and hardware for a community. Otherwise, you cannot match these UNESCO ideals related to freedom of expression and access to information. In short, that was the highlights that I would like to comment here. And since I comment that UNESCO did awareness, policies, and pilot projects, I would like to take this opportunity to say that there is a publication named How to Include Your Language in the Cyberspace, which is a very interesting contribution for the decision makers to include this topic in their agenda. When I mention that, I'm talking about governments, about developed banks, about communities, because, as I said in the beginning, it's a huge challenge. If you need additional information, the last slide will show you the website in UNESCO, which offers additional information. A last comment. Since, in my opinion, now not as a former UNESCO staff, but my external member, my view is that the challenge is huge, and therefore we have to share it. And I see with a lot of appreciation if UNESCO could give a certain priority to the topic of script encoding, because others can do IDN, others can do engineering, others can do interfaces. But I think that UNESCO is in a very good position to promote language standardization. We can go further in the debate. Thank you very much. Merci, gracias, shokran, spasibo, shei shei, obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Claudio. Muito obrigado. Je vais passer donc la parole maintenant au docteur Govin, qui va nous introduire à son expérience. Docteur Govin, you have the floor.
Thank you. I would like to. Is it audible at the back? Thank you. First of all, I would like to thank UNESCO, ICANN, and ITU to give me an opportunity to speak on a subject which is very emerging topic in the ICANN and ITU and everywhere, the language multilingual internet, which is keeping us busy even in the GAC, ICANN, where we are having a secretariat in India. As was told yesterday by Mr. Windsurf and Mr. Paul Toomey, that in order to reach the next 5.5 billion population, the multilingual internet is the only truly the way out. The Tunis agenda of paragraph 53 says the options for advancing the process for the introduction of multilingualism is in a number of areas, including domain names, email address, and a keyword lookup. Options for implementing programs also in cooperation with other appropriate organizations that allow for the presence of multilingual domain names and content on the internet, and the use of various software models to fight against the linguistic digital divide and to ensure the participation of all in the emerging new society. Strengthening cooperation between relevant bodies for the further development of technical standards and to foster their global deployment. IGF also elucidates the importance of multilingualism for wider participation of information and communication technology in the world, thereby bridging the digital divide. In its synthesis paper, it is mentioned that a multilingual internet would foster an inclusive, democratic, legitimate, respectful, and locally empowering information society. Further, the use of IDN in local languages in the multilingual environment will increase the local interest in internet content and increase the possibilities for all language groups to share and access information in their own language. Today's globalized environment, added need for the multilingual access and multilingual management of the data, as more and more business, governance, the e-commerce, the education, telemedicine, and all going into the internet. So we need to include the more and more language community in the internet. There is an urgent need to advance the process of multilingual internet, whether it is through the encoding and multiple scripts or many other internet language tools which need to be developed. The truly multilingual internet means a keyboard in variety of languages, English, Arabic, Hindi, Chinese, handling messages in multiple languages, users to enter text in multiple languages across the various applications, content in variety of languages. Thus, all this calls for a need for to bring international standards to have a unique identifier and the stable and secure internet. And in all aspects of the language, like storage standards, the font standard, inputting standard, transliteration standards, and perhaps we have to look into the standardization of the internet various tools, which across the platforms, across the systems we can work out, so that the internet is not prohibited for some sections of the society and it is available only to the privileged. And in this sense, I would like to now brief upon the government of India's. India's is perhaps the world's richest mix of living languages. We have 22 languages plus English, and there are 12 different scripts. And there's a complex environment for implementing the multilingual internet. We have a 1.1 billion population where the variety of scripts like Devanagari, Dravidian, Arabic, and other scripts are prevalent. And we have a sizable population of the various scripts and various languages. And in the ICANN, we have already established the technology and protocol part of the internationalized domain names. And important domain names are the implement the IDNs, both in the character inclusion tables are needed, the variant mapping considerations, contextual rules for the minimum and maximum lengths, prohibited prefixes or suffixes, potential contextual rules, prohibited character sequences. What we need in this to build a truly internet, global internet, is to have a standards on the domain name holders, techno policy details, geopolitical details, existing CCTLD strings, and privacy and whois details. And these, with the, I am glad to say that the GAC and the GAC and the ICANN, we are working on the variety of issues on CCTLDs and GTLDs on these multilingual domain names. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Dr. Govind. Je suis désolé de presser un peu les gens parce qu'on a très peu de temps. Il faut laisser une interaction au niveau du public également. Je crois que nous allons aborder maintenant une dimension, puisqu'après les expériences de terrain par rapport à ce qui existe, il est important que nous puissions avoir l'avis du secteur privé sur toutes ces questions qui sont des questions fondamentales de départ par rapport, disons, à un Internet multilingue. Ça a été évoqué, le problème de l'encodage, le problème des scripts, le problème des fontes. Et je crois que c'est important que nous puissions avoir l'avis des spécialistes autour de cette table. Je voudrais donc passer la parole à Vint Cirf. Vint Cirf d'abord, ensuite Michel Siguignard aussi va intervenir là-dessus. Vint, you have the floor.
How's that? Wow, how many engineers does it take to turn on this microphone? I will try to be very brief. Let me start by suggesting that we introduce a new phrase in our vocabulary. Let us call it responsible multilingualism. And I mean by this several things. First of all, since the internet is global, it's very important that multilingual elements work everywhere in the net, no matter what country you're in, no matter which internet cafe you're sitting in, no matter which Starbucks you're drinking coffee at, your domain names should resolve the same way. Your email should go where it's supposed to go, and it should come to you from wherever it started. So it's important that we have uniformity in the domain name systems operation all across the world, even in the presence of these multilingual elements. Second, it is irresponsible to introduce these large character sets without doing so in a way to minimize or reduce the potential for confusion. As much as we would like to think that the internet is made up of friendly people, we've learned that the general population of the world contains people who are not necessarily friendly, and they will do things to confuse others deliberately. So part of the work in standardizing the characters that are permitted in domain names is intended to reduce the likelihood of confusion by users who will be could be misled to the wrong sites on the network. Let's see. The one thing that I'd like to emphasize is that the introduction of internationalized domain names does not cause content to happen. Content will happen because people decide to create it and put it on the network. It's also important to recognize that the World Wide Web standards have permitted the use of Unicodes essentially from the beginning. So there hasn't been any constraint on the introduction of content in the net in multiple languages since the advent of HTTP and HTML and now XML. It's also the case that translation from one language to another is extremely crude today, and we are unfortunately not able to rely on that to overcome the barriers between languages. What this means is that we can anticipate an internet in which many people will not be able to communicate directly with each other. I think we have to accept that. What we want is an internet that permits people who share a common language to communicate with each other. Let me just put one last observation along those lines. Let us suppose for a moment that we are using electronic mail to communicate with each other. And let us imagine that we have many friends that we communicate with, some of whom speak Chinese, some of whom speak French, some of whom speak Swahili, and some of whom speak English. It would be nice if we could present our email to them, at least the addresses, in a language that they could understand. But that means that my email address, vint@google.com, may need to have a counterpart written in Swahili and another counterpart written in Chinese. And that needs to be presented to the Chinese recipient in Chinese. It needs to be presented to the Swahili recipient in Swahili. The implication of that, which is fairly complex, is that we may have to have multiple email identities if we want to make ourselves understandable, at least from the addressing point of view, to our colleagues who don't necessarily use the same languages that we do. So I leave that just on the table as a possible source of discussion. And add one more point, if I might. In addition to the applications which we use every day, whether it's searching the network or sending email or running other applications, the mechanics of registration of domain names involves what I will call operational support systems. And those systems need to deal with all of the languages as well. If you're going to be registering a domain name in, let's say, Korean, you have reason to expect that the forms that you fill out will be in Korean, that if you need help, there will be someone who speaks Korean who can help you. We need to take into account all of the operational support systems and the need for them to be multilingual as well. So I leave that and I turn this back over to you. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Vint. Je crois que c'est les problèmes sont posés et le débat va permettre peut-être d'approfondir ces dimensions-là. Je voudrais juste passer la parole donc à Michel Signard. S'il veut intervenir là.
Okay, so this would be a presentation mostly about content, because that's, you know, is it working? Okay. In fact, my first slide kind of shows some content that you can do today on the bottom of the screen. I use that as an example. I've done that in the past already. On it's in fact representing most of the CCTLDs in their native script, at least one of them down there. I mean, some of you may recognize them. I don't intend to go after all of them at this point. Basically, our motto here is global design but local experience. You want everybody on the planet to, you know, read and use their own writing system on UBC in their own language. And in fact, today, UBC is going to be a bit of a Vista commercial, sorry for that, but to some degree, that's why I'm for here. So we cover today 230 locales, and we ship, in fact, 130 languages user interface with Vista. Obviously, there's, you know, like panelists said before, there's about 6,000 or 7,000 languages on the planet used. So we're still very far from covering everything. You could say there's over 6,000 languages to cover. But obviously, having user interface is very different from being able to create a content. You don't need a user interface to create more content than that. And, you know, I have a slide, I mean, a pie chart that shows the coverage. Needless to say that we have already a very large coverage on word writing system today, and I will go to that. Obviously, it's kind of a given that to cover a language, we have to have a writing system. We are kind of depending on somebody doing the work of converting, you know, every languages on the writing system that we can then support when it gets encoded. And obviously, having a coding model for a writing system is also important. On we are very, in fact, involved on adding those encoding for those, you know, writing systems that still need to be covered. You know, that's just example. I will go quickly. You know, that was a page in Chinese and a page in Portuguese. So, anyway, so showing a bit the worldwide content, we do represent, in fact, most languages on writing system that are present today in Unicode 5.0 or ISO IEC 10646 2003. That's over 100,000 characters, just to give you the size of this character set. Obviously, I have to say that about this 100,000 characters, 70,000 are in fact CJK characters used, you know, CJK ideographs that are used in East Asia, obviously for Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. But that's it, 30,000 characters left that do represent everything else. On what I have on this slide is possible on every machine that contain, you know, the operating system. You can do all of them. On the right, I have an example of some of them. The table was not big enough. I didn't want to put all of them. It would be too small. And I put, in fact, in the left side, you have more of them, and you can try to determine what they are. The very last one, by the way, is Yi, which I don't know if anybody knows in the room what this is. It's a very important minority language in China. It's also ideographic in nature. I have another one, like in, I have, for example, Mongolian. We have Diveli. So we have a lot of, you know, system, writing system that are used by small minorities. And in fact, we have already a fairly large coverage on that. You can use many more. We don't cover everything, but by just adding a font, very often, you know, that use appropriate encoding, you can get more support than that. So I'm saying, in fact, we are a very long way in covering, from a content point of view, worldwide population. And this is based, the good news is also based in open standards. We work, in fact, with a lot of partners to implement this worldwide writing system based on open standards such as ISO IEC 10606 on Unicode version 5.0. We also use a format for open font format, which is based, in fact, on OpenType, and it also became an ISO standard as known as 14496-32. And that's, in fact, is OpenType, which was industry creation, and has become also an open standard within ISO. And obviously, the identification of languages, which is 639-3, which is the one that is used typically to identify languages. And we use that internally as well to identify cultural elements. And obviously, we are also implementing internationalized domain names. That's obviously has been a key element for us. And in fact, I was responsible for the company to follow that, and I've been intervening in many ICANN meetings to cover that. This is available, in fact, in your browser. So it's not just a Vista thing. You can use that also in everywhere else where you implement IE7. And also, we work on IRI. IRI is kind of the lesser known part of domain names. When you do domain name, you have to also to think of the rest of the HTTP, you know, address you see. The domain name is not all of it. You have what is on the right side of it in a Western writing system, you know, all the path or the query part, on everything has to be architectured to support non-ASCII characters. And to do that, we are very active as a company. In fact, I happen to be the project editor for ISO 10606. Okay. I'm putting Dutch down, so I have to just one. So we have more work to do. We're going, you know, in Asian languages like Limbu, Myanmar, Balinese, Faxpa, New Tailu, Thailay. You know, a lot of systems, you probably never heard of it, but we're still working on that. More writing system and more symbols. Character input is still an issue that we have to work on. That's not really very well standardized, and also part of the issue that many countries don't really have a well-established way of entering the characters. Like I said, we're already ready for IDN on IDN.IDN. On the two page here kind of demonstrate that. We have, in fact, worked with ICANN to make sure that IDN.IDN was working. IDN issue, so somebody else will cover that, but we'll be able to see that in the slides. Okay. So to conclude, you know, making progress, we're making progress on getting to the multilingual internet by doing more work in encoding additional writing systems that are still not covered. That's a key aspect of the work we still have to do, is to make sure that every community on the planet has a writing system to be expressed in. On OBC, we also need to make progress on implementing IDN, on improving it, because as we know, there's still some work to do to make IDN better. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, M. Signard, de nous avoir présenté la perspective de Microsoft en tant qu'entreprise dans la problématique qui nous concerne. Je voudrais maintenant, pour continuer tous les aspects liés aux questions techniques, aborder le développement des noms de domaines internationaux. Et je voudrais passer la parole d'abord à John Krensin, très rapidement. Si Vint souhaite aussi aborder deux ou trois questions, je crois que bon, vous allez partager le temps, mais vraiment très rapidement. Merci beaucoup.
I have the same problem you do. Turning it on is an important step. I'm going to speak very briefly in the hope of catching up with the schedule a little bit. I was very pleased to see earlier speakers comment on initiatives to get more content in local languages on the network, because from my point of view, whatever we can say about IDNs and other kinds of locators, it is the content issues that are the important ones. A way of efficiently getting to content which isn't there helps no one. Of efficiently getting the content which isn't there helps no one. If we have the content there, we have many, many means of finding it. We need IDNs as a foundation for that work, but it's important to understand that IDNs are not content identifiers.
Pas la traduction en français là. Qu'est-ce qui se passe là-bas? Moi, je vais rien comprendre. Hein?
No, no, no.
This is so complicated, I don't understand, you know? C'est des trucs techniques, c'est vrai que j'ai besoin du français.
We've actually just discovered one of the things which makes this hard. No matter what we do with the internet, in terms of transmitting information and transmitting characters, we are not going to solve quickly the problem of understanding languages which we do not naturally read and understand. Much of this work about multilingualism is importantly to permit communication within a language community, rather than worrying about communication between language communities, which is a much harder problem. I was interested in some of the comments that Vint made, because the issue about how I communicate with someone whose script I don't read and whose language I wouldn't understand if I did read the script is a problem we will not easily overcome. We will discover, I believe, that even for the long term, that our software systems are not good at making characters which we don't read intelligible to us. Whether they display those characters as completely unintelligible question marks or little boxes, or display them in scripts which we don't read. We will need to get better at understanding that communicating within a language community is different from communicating between language communities. Where we have been so far, or where we were 15 or 20 years ago, is that we all pretended we were the same language community, and that's a disaster and doesn't work very well. But we have to understand that we are balancing the ability to communicate efficiently within language communities with the ability to communicate globally. And that's our biggest challenge. It isn't making IDNs work. We know how to make IDNs work. There are technical issues. I won't spend the time here to describe those technical issues. But our location identifiers are not user-friendly even in ASCII. They are going to get less user-friendly as we move forward with more scripts and more multilingual content for those identifiers, and we're going to have to get very ingenious about ways of dealing with that which do not constrain our abilities to communicate internationally. Technically speaking, we've had content and email in multiple languages and scripts for more than 20 years. We've had interoperable content for about 15, and the difference is standards that make it possible for someone to interpret what it is they got. There was an innovation which went into the first standards for multilingual and multipurpose email that permitted one to send a message in multiple languages and have the receiving user get the language which they wanted to see the message in. And it's an interesting comment on where we stand that that facility has never been used in any real way except to send messages in both HTML and ASCII format. We still have some hopes for it. But again, as we're communicating with multiple communities and with recipients who speak a list of different languages and have email addresses in multiple scripts, we're going to have a whole series of challenges about how to think about that. The technical problems are comparatively easy. Thinking about it is very hard. We need to remember that as we move into communication between language communities rather than within them, that we are dealing with 5,000-year-old problems or 10,000-year-old problems, depending on how you count. We are not going to solve them overnight, and little internet tricks are not going to fix those problems. But I'm very optimistic about increasing use of these techniques of work we're now doing, which I hope is coming to a end of its first phases within the next couple of months, on email address internationalization and other things which will make communication within language communities and a much broader set of language communities much, much easier and much more effective than it's been.
Merci beaucoup. Vint, vous voulez ajouter quelque chose? C'est bon? Excellent. Merci beaucoup. Je crois que... Vous venez d'aborder une question fondamentale pour nous. C'est la grande question, en fait. C'est la grande question. Comment... moi, je me pose une vraie question. Nous sommes dans les technologies de l'information et de la communication. Nous sommes censés avoir aujourd'hui un potentiel qui nous permet de résoudre tous les problèmes. Pourquoi nous n'y arrivons pas? Ah oui, c'est ça la grande question. Je me pose la question de savoir si nous ne devons pas faire l'effort d'un changement de mentalité face à la diversité. Parce que quand j'entends 5 à 10 000 ans d'âge, des problèmes de 5 à 10 000 ans d'âge, on ne va pas les résoudre comme ça, je m'interroge. Quand est-ce qu'on pourra les résoudre? Alors, les spécialistes sont là. Il faut se mettre ensemble. J'allais dire quelque part, il faudrait même aller en conclave et ne pas sortir de là-bas avant de nous trouver les choses. Bon, ça, c'est juste un petit commentaire. Je voudrais maintenant passer la parole... Je voudrais maintenant passer la parole à Malcolm Johnson, qui va, du point de vue de l'UIT, nous faire avancer dans la maîtrise de ces questions de standardisation et des besoins de standardisation pour que nous puissions communiquer. C'est vrai que s'il y a la multiplicité, si on n'a pas les mêmes références quelque part pour pouvoir assurer, au-delà de la diversité, l'unicité de la communication humaine, ça peut poser problème. Merci beaucoup de nous parler de ces questions.
Merci, Adaman. This thematic workshop and the one that follows it in this room immediately afterwards, addressing accessibility, are really discussing the two major barriers to making the internet a truly inclusive. With the tools that we have available, neither linguistic diversity nor disability should be insurmountable. Both require sensitivity to the needs of others, awareness raising, and understanding. During the Geneva phase of the World Summit on Information Society, the world leaders were unanimous in making a commitment to encourage the development of content and to put in place the technical conditions in order to facilitate the presence and use of all the world languages by 2015. As our moderator is only too aware, who was chairing that event. So there's a tremendous, at the highest level, political willingness to achieve this objective. However, realistically, it's unlikely that the 6,000 or so languages will be available on the internet. In fact, there are many disappearing faster than we are putting them on the internet. But it's certainly possible, and as the WSIS commitment said, to put in place the technical conditions to facilitate multilingualism. And standardization work in this domain relates to the development of the Unicode by the Unicode Consortium and ITU's sister organization in Geneva, the International Standards Organization, with which we're a partner in the World Standards Collaboration. ITO's own contribution is the International Reference Alphabet, defined in our recommendation T50, which sets out a 7-bit character code with regional and national options. And we also have a recommendation T52 on providing equivalent coded character sets for non-Latin scripts. Our ongoing work, we do look also at IDNs. We carried out a survey of the needs and experiences of the membership of ITU with regard to IDN, and we passed the results to the GAC. Our continued work on this area relates to the standardization of speech processing technologies for use on the internet, to overcome the problem of languages which don't have a written script, as well as assisting with disabilities, which we'll talk about in the next workshop. We're very keen to establish close working relationships with the other organizations active in this field, especially UNESCO, ISO, IETF, ICANN, and others. And we organize joint workshops with these, and we're very keen to do some more workshops, including, I should have mentioned, WIPO. We're developing a terminology database in the six languages. ITU has six official languages, and we are developing a terminology database on telecoms terms. And we are encouraging our member states to translate as many of our standards as possible into languages in addition to these six official languages, and make them available on our website. So ITU is committed to making a contribution to this international effort. We, as a standards body, fairly unique in the sense that we have 191 governments, as well as over 700 private sector entities. It's an unusual international public-private partnership. We want to make a commitment to participate in this very important effort. There was mention earlier on that, but going back to 1845, I think it was 1865, the ITU was established. It's the oldest international organization, and 150 years ago, the ITU adopted the Morse code. So that, of course, became the simplest and first real form of global communication. And our goal now is to reconcile the simplicity that is required for efficient international information exchange with the huge diversity of the world's cultural richness, and so to build on a fully inclusive information society. Thank you very much, Mr. Moderator.
Merci beaucoup, Malcolm. Je crois que cette intervention de Malcolm met fin à la présentation des panélistes. On est déjà à moins de 5 minutes normalement de notre temps de l'atelier. Je voudrais quand même demander à la salle s'il y a une ou deux interventions par rapport à tout ce qui a été entendu, juste une ou deux interventions en termes peut-être de questions ou de commentaires rapides. Parce qu'on n'a pas beaucoup de temps, malheureusement, pour le débat, et je le regrette beaucoup, parce que c'est des questions fondamentales qui sont évoquées. Mais l'essentiel des présentations permet quand même de se faire une idée de où nous allons et avec quels moyens. Voilà. Y a-t-il une ou deux interventions que je prendrai très rapidement avant de conclure cet atelier, qui en fait est une ouverture à une problématique permanente? Pas de questions? Pas de commentaires? Une question, oui, allez-y. Non, vous, donnez-lui un micro, là. Oui, je vais le faire.
Thank you very much for the panelists for this very inspiring panel. I'm Ayman Sherbini from the United Nations ESQA, Economic Social Commission for Western Asia,
And we are very much involved in this multilingualism, especially from the Arabic language domain, and working on the Arabic content initiative, Arabic content incubators, and Arabic domain name systems, and very much in coordination with UNESCO, ICANN, and ITU. And my question is concerning the very important issue of standardizing the character use, which Vint said that it is basic, especially in this phase. In the IETF, there is no group for the IDN-specific RFCs, and we have published an internet draft with very close cooperation with the stakeholders, and especially the League of Arab States. And this is the time now where we want to take it to the last mile, which is making it a standard RFC. So my question is, why is there no IDN application, IDN area under the IETF? They said that it is somehow under the application group. Application is really very wide. And we are speaking about the small issue, which is very much in specific, and language specific more. So my question, why there is no IDN group in the IETF? Why is it under the application group? If we want really multilingualization, standardization, we should take it further on the hierarchy. And I would like to get an answer for that, if you please. Thank you.
This is a very difficult question to try to answer in a minute or two, because the key to the answer is a description about how the IETF is organized, which is a discussion I'm happy to have with you offline. But the brief answer is that we do not organize areas around particular subject matter. Even the domain name system is a couple of working groups in different broader areas. IDNs are being worked on in the applications area because, in terms of the internet architecture, it's an application, and it's an application of a very specific kind of encoding for the DNS. Again, we could talk at more length, but I don't think it's worth picking up this time now to go into more detail on that.
Could I just one observation? John is correct. It should not inhibit you at all from being able to introduce this as an RFC or propose it as an RFC. So you don't need any more structure than is there, and I would encourage you to proceed.
Mon nom c'est Yaobi Atouron, je viens du Bénin. Je crois que le problème de langue est très important, mais aussi très simple si nous prenons ça d'une certaine façon. Pour moi, la compréhension de la chose, c'est que dans ma communauté locale, je travaille, j'ai des contenus dans ma communauté locale. Je suis actuellement ici au Brésil. Je peux aussi avoir accès dans ça, dans ma communauté locale. Je crois que si nous prenons ça de cette façon, c'est très simple. Et il y a beaucoup de travail à faire, bien sûr. C'est là où je pose la question pour savoir si, est-ce que, au niveau de nos nations, il y a des actions que vous avez menées, est-ce qu'il y a un travail qui se fait à ce niveau? Et au même moment, je crois que nous devons continuer à réduire le nombre de langues internationales. Si quelqu'un me donne sa carte de visite avec son adresse email dans sa langue, vraiment, je ne sais pas ce que je vais faire avec si je ne sais pas lire sa langue. Et je crois que c'est là où c'est important qu'au même moment que le travail se fait au niveau des communautés, au même moment, on doit travailler à réduire le nombre de communications internationales. Parce que c'est ça l'idéal, au fait. Sinon, si j'ai une carte avec 3 ou 4 langues dessus, qu'est-ce que je vais en faire? Donc, c'est ce que je voudrais ajouter. Merci. Alors, ma question, est-ce qu'il y a un site sur lequel je peux aller voir tout ce que je fais au niveau de nos communautés, surtout en Afrique? Est-ce qu'il y a un travail avec nos gouvernements? Est-ce qu'il y a un travail en train d'être fait? Parce que je crois qu'il y a vraiment beaucoup de travail à faire. Et nous ne devons pas avoir peur de ça. Nous devons commencer, même si c'est plusieurs années que ça va prendre. Nous devons commencer ce travail et avancer parallèlement à ce qui se fait actuellement. Merci.
Allô? Oui, la question est complexe, mais il est plus ou moins compréhensible qu'au niveau des organismes internationaux, ce qu'ils ont fait est jouer le rôle de faciliter, d'aider à que les pouvoirs publics dans chaque pays adopte. Moi, je mets un énorme accent sur la question du codage du script parce que c'est un prérequis pour le développement et des logiciels et des matériels adaptés aux besoins d'une communauté locale. Je profite de l'occasion pour dire que l'UNESCO a fait un travail très intéressant pour les scripts NCO. Il n'y avait pas de page web NCO avant ce travail. Et maintenant que cette script est codée, il y a 20 millions de personnes qui peuvent avoir des pages web. Est-ce que ce travail est généralisable à l'échelle mondiale? Non, il n'est, de mon point de vue, ce n'est pas le rôle de l'UNESCO. Le rôle, c'est donner des exemples pour que les investisseurs, et je serai peu diplomatique, et je dirais mettre d'argent pour fabriquer, adapter ce genre de choses qui va permettre que chaque communauté dans le monde ait sa page web qui sera utilisée pour tout le monde. C'est, voilà comme je vois la chose.
Oui, je crois que la question, elle est double, parce qu'il ne s'agit pas seulement des moyens, il s'agit aussi qu'est-ce que les gouvernements font. Et pour répondre à la question de mon compatriote africain, l'Académie africaine des langues que j'ai l'honneur de présider actuellement a un grand programme lié à la présence des langues africaines dans le cyberespace. Donc nous sommes en train de mettre ensemble des linguistes africains, des informaticiens et des spécialistes d'autres pays de manière à pouvoir d'abord assurer les prérequis par rapport à la présence de nos langues dans le cyberespace. Et de ce point de vue, Claudio Menezes a évoqué la publication de l'UNESCO qui a été faite par un compatriote africain, Marcel Dikikidiri. Comment assurer la présence des langues dans le cyberespace? Ce n'est pas seulement par rapport à l'Afrique, mais c'est par rapport à tous les pays qui n'ont pas les langues dans le cyberespace. Donc c'est un processus qui est en cours et je crois que nous aurons l'occasion d'en parler en dehors de cet atelier. Une dernière question?
I don't need to talk in front of you. Excuse me. I have two questions to you. One of them is the problem of unifying language that, for me, is very similar with a problem that the high-energy physicians are trying to solve now. I don't know if anyone here study unified energy high physicians, but they are now with a theory of at least 10 dimensions to understand the universe, right? So what's the problem in that scenario? It's impossible to believe that a unique grammatic will be possible even to the physicians that are working with a very precise, with not cultural and social aspects. Let me tell you the example of Rio de Janeiro, a local place with a lot of people talking Portuguese. But if you go to some place in the city, like favelas, you cannot understand the language they are talking there, right? Just a small example of the problem that we need to solve, cultural problem. And we are trying to approach in practical terms this problem using the culture exchange as a solution to the problem of language or of communication. In that sense, we can make a language near of us, Spanish, for example, and try to have people there localizing our Portuguese content, and we localizing Spanish content. It's a bit different of a company localizing one content to 6 billion people, right? Microsoft, Google, all the sites that are now in internet are not doing the right job to multicultural expression. The second point I would like to tell is the video aspects of internet, the translation of content, audiovisual contents, right? It's not a problem of only translate texts, but all kind of media in the digital convergence scenario. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. On a un gros problème de temps. Autrement, les questions que vous avez évoquées sont des questions fondamentales. Est-ce que dans le panel, il y a peut-être quelqu'un qui veut... Non? Alors, je voudrais dire, la question fondamentale que vous posez est celle de la nature elle-même. C'est-à-dire qu'en fait, ce qui nous préoccupe aujourd'hui, c'est de faire en sorte que ce qui va se passer au niveau d'Internet puisse refléter ce qui se passe dans la nature. Aujourd'hui, à Rio, si vous avez la majorité qui comprend le portugais, il est bien certain qu'à Rio, comme dans beaucoup de communautés, il y a toujours des communautés qui sont plus à l'aise dans des dialectes du portugais que dans la langue standard. Donc ça, c'est une question naturelle. Ce n'est pas Internet qui va compliquer la question par rapport à ça. La question qui se pose aujourd'hui, c'est comment, avec cette évolution d'Internet et de l'utilisation d'Internet et donc cette nouvelle société qui va nous faire davantage communiquer à travers la machine, comment nous pouvons résoudre cette diversité de situations. C'est là la grande question. Et ça pose effectivement le problème, probablement, des langues véhiculaires, c'est-à-dire les langues qui sont comprises par la majorité. La lingua franca, si on peut s'exprimer autrement. Donc la question qui se pose, c'est celle... Ben, donc je vais passer la question à Christine, parce qu'au niveau de l'arabe, ils ont le même problème. Il y a beaucoup de... comme dans toutes les langues, il y a les dialectes et puis il y a la langue standard. Donc cette question qui se pose est une question fondamentale quand on arrive à Internet. Mais je vais lui passer la parole.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Adama. I think I just wanted to comment that maybe the various stakeholders of the Internet, their most important role is setting standards and enabling the users. But the one who will localize content and make it and maybe innovate content is definitely the users and the end users. And I think that's a lesson that we have to learn. The issue is that, and what we have to focus on, how to enable those users, how to give them the tools, to give them the application, encoding the languages that are not encoded, in order to have them innovate, localize, produce content. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup. Je crois que nous sommes arrivés. Ah, il y a quelqu'un, il y a une dernière personne. Last person. C'est vrai qu'on a commencé un peu tard. Je crois qu'on peut déborder un peu.
Right. My question was kind of asked slightly by the previous person and partially answered by you. The point is that we are kind of assuming that every language is standard and therefore we can build the standardization. When we look at the entire stack, right from the fonts onward to the spelling and then the Unicode, it breaks down before you reach the Unicode stage because the fonts themselves are not standardized within the language and also the spellings are not standardized. The issue gets more complicated when the language is used transborder because you do not know which department of the other government is responsible. Even the government doesn't know because it can be Ministry of Home or Ministry of Cultural Affairs or Ministry of IT. And even if they know, they don't have the mandate to standardize it. And it gets more complicated because there are media houses who support one kind of spellings and one kind of fonts. To take an example, if I look at just Bengali, there are combination of fonts which are called the Juktakshars. The way it's handled within India, there are five different ways of doing it. Across the border in Bangladesh, it's done in a very different manner. Tamil is an official language in four countries. It's handled very differently in all these four countries. How can we have some mechanism to make sure that standardization happens at the language level before we reach the Unicode level?
Maybe I can comment on that. Yes, please.
Yes. I'm very familiar with the problem. It's one of the things which causes me to be skeptical about the use of IDNs across communities because the DNS is not good at sloppy matching or matching alternate spellings or alternate variations, and normal human beings expect those alternatives to work. The simplest example in English is that almost everyone who uses the language has gotten used to the variations between British and US spellings. But we can't make the DNS understand that difference. There's just no practical way within that technology to do it. In applications and in content, we can do more and deeper tagging of identification of what's going on. And we can identify scripts if we need to. We can identify languages if we need to. We can identify countries or subcountry groups and dialects if we need to. It's much harder in a place like the DNS where it's just characters. But again, one of the difficulties is that we have to figure out what it is we want to do. And some of that is balancing culture against uniformity and interchangeability. To create a universal language, to standardize orthographies, is a very, very dangerous thing if one is trying to preserve cultural diversity and cultural integrity. It may improve communications, but because semantics may be attached to these things and differences in subtle meaning, we may lose information and lose culture as we do those things. And it's a balance which really has nothing to do with the internet, although the internet is pushing it in our faces, but a long-term important problem for the world.
Well, of course it's a complex thing, but it's a matter for discussion mainly with the linguistic community, because it's almost impossible to map all the nuance of a language into digital codes. So what I see is that also communities that speak a language have to understand that also they take advantage sometimes in renouncing to certain very specific thing to benefit and to share the information in a global scene, because otherwise we maybe can reach a sort of catch-22 situation, which is not good for anybody. But your point is very relevant, because sometimes the mapping into a code can bring to documents that are not used by those to whom they are addressed. But of course, sometimes you have to compromise a little bit. And I do believe that it is possible and to the benefit of sharing knowledge. Thanks.
Merci beaucoup, Claudio, et merci. D'avoir donné quelques éclairages. Je crois que nous arrivons à la fin de cet atelier. Je voudrais commencer par rebondir sur cette dernière question. En réalité, il ne faudrait pas que nous perdions de vue ce dont nous sommes en train de parler. Parler d'un Internet multilingue, c'est parler d'une société multilingue, d'abord, avant d'arriver dans Internet. Donc, toutes les questions que nous soulevons actuellement sur la diversité sont des questions d'abord qui doivent se résoudre dans la réalité. Autrement, ce n'est pas Internet qui va être la solution pour ça. Les pistes ont été déjà données par l'UNESCO tout à l'heure quand Claudio intervenait. La priorité des priorités dans la réalité de la société, c'est que toutes les communautés où il y a une diversité de langues, il faut qu'il y ait des étapes prérequis qui soient assurées pour déjà l'encodage de ces langues. Et dans la diversité des situations, les linguistes ont à charge de travailler avec les communautés de locuteurs sur la standardisation de l'écriture, de l'orthographe des différentes langues dans les différentes régions du monde. Et ça, c'est une question de débat permanent. Il est certain que quand on standardise une langue, il y a toujours des dialectes qui vont perdre tel ou tel aspect de leur spécificité, de leur richesse. Il y a des expressions idiomatiques qu'on ne peut pas retrouver forcément au niveau standardisation et qu'on a au niveau du dialecte ou de la substance des locuteurs. Ça, c'est un problème permanent, universel. C'est toujours la tension entre le global et le local. Donc ça, nous sommes obligés de traiter cette question, et c'est pour cette raison que la coopération autour de la question d'Internet est une coopération qui met en scène des gens qui s'occupent des contenus, donc l'UNESCO, des gens qui s'occupent des infrastructures et des techniques, l'UT, et des gens qui s'occupent du renforcement de l'instrument de communication qu'est Internet dans le monde visuel, ICANN, avec tout ce que cela implique comme débat que nous venons d'avoir. Je crois que cet atelier nous donne l'occasion de constater qu'il y a une complexité des situations au niveau de la diversité, mais qu'il y a des solutions possibles, et ça c'est important, et que l'une des conditions pour trouver les solutions, c'est de faire ce que cet atelier vient de faire, c'est de mettre ensemble les différents acteurs concernés pour pouvoir engager un débat sur comment arriver à rendre l'Internet multilingue. Mais comment arriver à rendre l'Internet multilingue, ce n'est pas une utopie impossible. Il ne s'agit pas de faire en sorte que les 6000 langues soient dans Internet. Ça, je m'adresse à Malcolm. La question n'est pas là. C'est potentiellement que l'Internet peut faire admettre toutes les langues du monde. Ça, c'est ce qu'on a dit à Genève, potentiellement. Comment le faire maintenant? Il y a des langues qui vont mourir, qui sont mortes déjà, qui vont mourir dans 10 ans, dans 5 ans, dans 2 jours, tous les jours. Il y a les statistiques qui existent. Il y a des langues qui meurent dans le monde. La question n'est pas à ce niveau-là. Une chose est de laisser les langues mourir naturellement. Une autre chose, de programmer leur mort. Et pour moi, si nous ne faisons pas l'effort de faire en sorte que chaque communauté du monde puisse être à l'aise dans Internet et avoir sa langue dans Internet, eh bien, nous programmons la mort de ces langues-là, parce que Internet, c'est l'instrument aujourd'hui que tout le monde est obligé progressivement d'utiliser. Et comment faire en sorte que cette nouvelle société en construction soit une société où tout le monde soit à l'aise? C'est là la question qui a été posée et que les panélistes ont eu à évoquer de leur point de vue, depuis les expériences de terrain jusqu'à la réflexion des différentes institutions qui travaillent sur ces langues. J'étais en train de conclure, mon frère. Vous voulez poser une question? Donc, je voudrais dire que le débat doit continuer. Il y a d'autres ateliers qui vont parler de ces questions-là. Il y a aussi le processus qui continue en dehors de l'espace de l'IGF, c'est-à-dire que les différents partenariats se construisent entre l'UNESCO et différentes institutions, comme notre institution, l'Académie africaine des langues. Nous allons renforcer notre préoccupation de l'encodage et des scripts avec l'appui de l'UNESCO, avec l'UIT, certainement dans le cadre du réseau mondial pour la diversité linguistique Maya, que j'ai l'honneur de présider. Nous allons évoquer cette question de la présence des langues dans le cyberespace, et nous avons l'année prochaine, 2008, année internationale des langues, une conférence internationale qui va être organisée, je l'espère, à Barcelone sur cette question-là. Donc ces questions vont revenir encore à l'ordre du jour avec l'UNESCO, l'UIT, ICANN, dans le cadre de l'identification des voies et moyens de faire en sorte que, comme on l'a dit à Genève, aux horizons de 2015, nous puissions potentiellement mettre à l'aise toutes les communautés du monde pour qu'elles sachent qu'elles peuvent utiliser leur langue dans Internet. Mais leur langue, c'est la langue standardisée déjà. C'est la langue, le potentiel d'Internet peut permettre de faire beaucoup de choses. Mais il faudrait que la question de la standardisation soit résolue en amont de la standardisation technique au niveau d'Internet. Voilà ce que je voulais dire par rapport à quelques éléments de conclusion de cet atelier. Comme je l'ai dit au départ, ce n'est pas une conclusion qui ferme, c'est une conclusion qui ouvre à la nécessité de continuer à coopérer entre l'UIT, l'UNESCO, ICANN, et que les entreprises qui travaillent sur le terrain, sur nos langues, puissent permettre aussi de faire en sorte que nous puissions, ceux qui parlent la langue, en utilisant les logiciels qui sont donnés, puissent travailler eux-mêmes à développer leur langue. Et ça, c'est extrêmement important. La question n'est pas d'avoir une langue dans Internet, la question n'est pas de traduire ce qui existe en français dans la langue, dans une autre langue, ou en anglais dans une autre langue. La question, c'est que chaque citoyenne et chaque citoyen de notre nouvelle société en construction puisse être capacité de telle manière qu'il puisse lui-même utiliser Internet pour développer son génie propre, en inventant les choses, en découvrant les choses, mais évidemment, avec le souci aussi d'une mise en cohérence pour qu'on ne fragmente pas l'instrument et pour qu'on puisse avoir une stabilité de l'Internet, une sécurité de l'Internet, de manière à pouvoir à la fois se fonder sur la diversité, mais avoir une unicité de la communication humaine à travers ce bel instrument. Voilà, merci beaucoup aux panélistes de nous avoir aidés à découvrir les difficultés qu'il y a à avoir un Internet multilingue, mais aussi de nous avoir donné l'espoir que c'est possible. Que Dieu nous aide dans cette perspective-là. Merci beaucoup. Inch'Allah.
comment tu vas? Mais ça va? Alhamdulillah, ça fait plaisir de te voir. Continue, in fact, with the help of Claudio, who is already in our on our board in Maya. So we
Bom dia. Mas é?
Testing 1, 2, 3. Hello, are you there?
Oh, yeah, yeah.